Yeah, I love that.
Well, you know, and I totally agree. It's very evident that the larger, I mean, with COVID, the clarity of who's oppressed is now very, is even brighter. The poorest people, the folks with the least housing, the jobs that are either disappeared, have disappeared, or are on their way out. All these things reflect Black America, but it's now white America, and it's happening simultaneously to both of us. Mm-hmm. And the rage that it's creating is no longer below the surface, but unfortunately, we're in these trenches of Black and white, and we tend to keep going down those trenches without being able to look up and out and see the commonality of the capitalist system at its worst.
Hello, my name is Clay Boykin, and I am in search of the new compassionate male. Yesterday, Matthew Hayes and Art Carter joined my producer, Dennis Tardon, and me for a conversation on what is happening in America today. Matthew and Art are two former guests on this podcast, and we are inviting you to follow us as we search for answers. For more information and to contact us, visit newcompassionatemail.com. Here's the conversation.
Matthew, you called this meeting.
Yeah.
And so why don't we start off and Matthew, talk to us. What's on your mind?
You know, so I was intentional about not planning for today. And because I just, we didn't plan for our first conversation. It was everything that it needed to be and more. And I got so much value out of that conversation. And I wanted to, there just needed to be a way to do that more. Right. And that's what I wanted today to be for. Like, how do we do more of that on a grander scale? And specifically for me, and I'm thinking about, you know, our community, when I speak like to myself and Art, I don't know many young Black boys who are comfortable talking to older white men. And I want to show them that somehow, to start changing the narrative. Because I see so many kids, and I'm sure Art can speak to this too, and even both of you, that are growing up with a perception, not a reality. And also have a goal in mind, right? We all have this mindset of, I want unity, and I want community, and I want us all to come together. But at the same time, simultaneously, I have the mindset that's divisive, that they're like this and I'm like this, and there's no way that there's a bridge. And those two things never will work. So there has to be a way to show them that, you know, at first and foremost, out of any conversation, we are people, right? Then let's talk about the rest of the stuff, right? Let's have that common ground first before we try to get to higher ground. And I think so many people are doing it backwards. It's, let's have the higher ground conversation without building the bridge first. And that's why there's so much disparity. So I wanted to share this kind of conversation with all of us here on this screen. Let's talk about it. Let's show it. And let's see where it goes from there. And I was open to what that looks like. I don't have a trajectory of where it's going yet. But I wanted to talk to you guys at least first and say, you know, I'm open and I'm willing and wanting to do something. I don't know what that something is, but I want to do it. Just sign me up.
Well, I'm the number two in line. I'm signing up right now on the dotted line. Consider this my signature, Matthew.
Well, and Matthew, I want to share that I'm already mind mapping this. So that says that I'm in.
I'm receiving that. Yeah.
You know, talk about divine order. The call that I had just before this one was with one of our guys in our circle that's done all kinds of men's work over the years, from, you know, the in the woods type stuff to the gentle.
He's a woodsman. Yeah.
I mean, he's bigger than life, thank God.
Isn't he? Yeah, he's the quintessential. Yes, the tamed Yeti.
he's got the purest and the kindest heart you'll ever know.
And he's fierce.
Well, the conversation we just had was that we've been having a Wednesday evening meeting, Dennis and Art and a few others, for several weeks. Well, since George Floyd was murdered. And it's been on, I call it racism in America, has connected the dots that it's not the blacks and the whites that are fighting each other. I mean, this is the wrong thing. We're on the same side. We're both, you know, suppressed and by the overall patriarchy. You're more suppressed than I am, but teaming together, we can lift one another up. Don't do this, do this. And he's all about reconciliation. That's what keeps coming to him. And so I've just handed over our Wednesday night meeting, which has been on racism, and it's going to evolve into reconciliation. Okay. And so that's evolving out of that, which dovetails in and fits in right along with what we're talking about, at least a piece of it.
Yeah, I love that.
Well, you know, and I totally agree. It's very evident that the larger, I mean, with COVID, the clarity of who's oppressed is now is even brighter. I mean, the poorest people, the folks with the least housing, the jobs that are either disappeared, have disappeared, or are on their way out. All these things reflect Black America, but it's now White America, and it's happening simultaneously to both of us. Mm-hmm. And the rage that it's creating is no longer below the surface, but unfortunately, we're in these trenches of Black and White, and we tend to keep going down those trenches without being able to look up and out and see the commonality of the capitalist system at its worst. I mean, I was, totally at its worst. I was struck the other day seeing that artists and entertainers and people, my son's an artist, and seeing that in Britain, despite all this COVID, which is hitting them equally hard, they have a fail-safe system to support the fine arts.
Exactly.
In other words, there's an unemployment system just for artists.
Wow.
Where we allow you to drown. You know, you drown too bad. So I think we're beginning. Maybe one of the few good things coming out of COVID with you know, hundreds of thousands of deaths, is that we can see capitalism in its rawest form and mm-hmm. how it has really abandoned humankind.
Yes. Well, as you know, Art, and this is what I love about this conversation is because I'm a capitalist. Because I've deeply benefited from the capitalist system. So you have to understand, I've been at the top of what the everything has been greased for me to get to the capitalistic system. So I've looked at the system. I said, all right, now can this system evolve? Can we evolve to a system where the capitalistic system, where it has a bottom line that has more colors than just red and black? That there are things like corporate responsibility and possibility. That is there any way for us to, before I abandon the system, and I am willing, I'm open and I'm willing to do that. What I want to do is to say, can it be revived in what to be a more compassionate system that actually has that a hybrid of, you know, like, for example, my sense is that the state should take the responsibility for any time they incarcerate a human being. It should never be in private industry. You should never have it should be on all of us. It should never go to private industry to incarcerate a human being. So I just believe that as a personal, as a personal belief. I don't believe there should be any space in the capitalistic system for incarceration of human beings. You know, I believe that needs to be for all of us. And so those are my questions. Those are the things that I would love to discuss, is that if it's possible to resurrect, to reconfigure and to make the system of capitalism be before we throw it out completely, really, is there any way to reconfigure it and get it into a place where we can go? So that's one of the things. I know we can't solve that here, but that is one of my dear hopes that we can do before I abandon capitalism altogether.
So I'm doodling while we're talking here. So
knowing that I have benefited from the system, that it has been, I've been the one that has been the beneficiary of this system, where many others have not been, that have been. So I realize I have a deep biases, conscious and unconscious, on this.
And I value these conversations so much because, for me at least, that feels like the biggest blind spot that I operate under, because I am not a systems person in terms of big government, at least, and like the global systems. I'm a people person. So I'm more focused on the connection and the humanity side of things. So mm-hmm. I love these kinds of conversations that open my awareness to new perspectives and things like that. So thank you both, Art and Dennis, for sharing some of that. Because, you know, a lot of my work in this space is the human, right? The human mindset, the human emotional awareness, the being able to have the control, the how do you show up in every situation at your optimal, right? And that's regardless of what the external is, at least for me. So mm-hmm. that's where my training and my work is let's say I'm under a dictatorship. How do I find happiness? Let's say I'm in the midst of a terrible relationship. How do I find joy? Right. So I'm less focused on the systems, but I know how important it is. So I'm thankful to be a part of this, to have both of you guys teach me.
Well, it really appears that it's the fundamentals, you know, the old Maslow hierarchy. If mm-hmm. if people don't have safe homes, which Thank we you. Know a lot of African-Americans in inner city do not have safety at home.
Nope. I mean,
you get in and you're locked yourself in and you're barricaded. And that's been going on for years. So you don't have safety at home. You don't have certainty of work.
Nope.
Because even though they've slaved in all the major kinds of manufacturing there is, everything from coal mines to railroads to Amazon today, they don't have secure work because it comes and goes. The only security is if you can pack up, take your laptop on your back or whatever and yeah. go off to wherever the jobs are.
Exactly.
We don't have health care. Health care is not viewed as a right in America. It's one of the only capitalist societies that doesn't believe that health care is a right.
Exactly. Exactly. And there isn't a great migration place to go to from the South to the
Not
North for manufacturing. You don't have that anymore. We had that as an artificial safety net.
Yes.
Yeah.
To be able to go up to those manufacturing jobs, which were not open. I'm listening to Michelle Obama's book on, and it's just stunning, and she reads it herself. I've read all, I've listened to all of Barack Obama's book. As a matter of fact, he lives
right here. Oh, wow, you have the portrait.
He lives right here on my on my wall. But listening to her book and about her parents and the work that they did in inner city Chicago, and boy, does the system need work.
Yeah, and so then the fourth issue is we black people and poor whites, but mostly blacks, we work in an overarching system of penalty and force of law. In other words, the law, as they call it down here in Austin when you talk to old black folks, the laws will come and get you. The laws are outside. In other, so when there's any digression or when there's any potential for social unrest, which brings progress, the laws can quell it. And that's why Black Lives Matter was handled the way it was with violence when law enforcement said enough. So that's the arm of capitalistic society that enforces its
absolutely
domestic terrorism.
Exactly. Let me ask you guys this question then, because I think it ties back to what we were kind of chatting about while I was on the balcony. From my perspective to you guys, where, you know, my focus is more so on the human, in terms of this conversation, where do you feel the beginning is? Is it the system or the people?
I always believe it has to start at the people. It has to start at the people. The people can't, the system, the system is too big. It has to start with the people. It has to start with the conversations. I mean, like President Obama started in, you know, he comes out of Harvard Law and comes out of school and then goes into 3 years of community organizing and goes down and talks and works with the people and gets the conversations going. And the way he would sit there in Chicago, he would sit down and he would start the conversations and where does it work? But it, because it, I do not see it. I can see there is work to be done by opening opportunities from the top down, but the bottom up has to be where you're talking about, Matthew, from the people perspective. This has to be a people's movement in doing this, because it's been my experience as a human being is that it is very easy for me, whenever I have a problem, to look for a victim.
Yeah.
To victimize, to look for outside to say, well, obviously the problem can't be with me. Obviously the problem can't be in here. I don't have to look inside. Who can I blame?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, it's easy for me to blame China. It's easy for me to blame the African American community for taking my job, the things that I have, because I don't have to look. Well, am I building my skills? I do this comedy routine where I show the 1948 Detroit Pistons, the picture of the championship team, Detroit Pistons, and then I show the 2021 Los Angeles Lakers, and I say, how do you feel that this team would compare
to this team,
if they played on the thing? I mean, and it's not that, it's just that it's not that these people don't have talent, the 1948 Pistons, but I'm telling you, they would have to up their game. And that's where I see a lot of the white fear happening, is that we have to now up our game. We need to work as hard now as the African American community has been working, because we can no longer coast. We no longer get that extra thing. We got to get in there. And so it's very easy for me to blame, for us to blame and to say, well, it's being taken. No, up the goddamn game.
Yeah. That's reminded me of something I talked about actually a couple years ago when you were talking about looking for something to blame.
It doesn't say this is, for God's sakes, healthcare. We want a healthy economy.
let me jump in here just a second. What I'm hearing is there's two things. Early on, do we abandon the system? Do we reconfigure the system? And then the other piece is that Matthew said, well, where do we start? The system or the people? And earlier we were talking about capitalist systems at its worst, and then people's basic hierarchy of needs. I think it's a yes and.
Yeah, simultaneous.
Yeah, it's a yes and. And I think...
Right back.
Yeah, the work that I'm doing with the gender equity and reconciliation folks, they're about deep healing between women and men. And
that's one of the connections we need to talk about.
Yeah. And so that whole idea, that deep healing between women and men, that's where it begins there.
Yeah.
And then it's okay. The systems will follow, but we can't wait. You got to work on that too.
Yeah. Hey, no, now that you, sorry. Go ahead. Now that you mentioned that, you know, I've been talking about it for the last 2 years or so about why healing across those gender lines are so important, that we have to work together and, you know, find exemplars of the people that represent, you know, build that inner confidence to be able to do that. But now that you mention it, you know, I think that that's where we need to begin, like you were saying, because I feel like regardless of sexuality, that's where the breakdown has begun, between the most basic units of genders, of how men and women relate, regardless of if it's a woman by birth or a woman now, or a man by birth or a man now, regardless, you know, how do you interact with the opposite sex? And go ahead.
Yes. And what they have also said is it's you can hardly talk about the gender issues without talking about race.
Mm.
There's the intersection between the two, and they're really struggling with that because their workshops that are very intense have men, women, black, white all together.
Yeah.
Yet the black woman's issue is different than the black white woman, the black man and the white man. Yeah. And so you get this, the intersectionality all going on, and it's tough.
Hmm.
That said, though, we're at a higher enough level of intelligence, the human being, that we can go, the white folks can go work, figure out healing between women and men, and the black folks can do the same, and we can all come together, and then we can do this.
Yeah.
It can't be done that way, though. I'm afraid. I'm afraid the divisiveness between black men and black women is a product of the overlay of racism in this country for centuries, going all the way back to House Negroes and coloreds and things like that. That was all, and it's worldwide. Because in Brazil, in Portugal, in South America, in somewhat less so in Europe, there's a hierarchy, and the black males, who were the object of absolute oppression by in slavery and in free times, that divisiveness between the sexes is a product. Yeah. Of, I don't want to call capitalism in those days, but whatever it was, imperialism, brought on by Isabella and all those folks. So to put that back together, I still contend we need some basic foundations of work, solid opportunities to work, whether it's like FDR's, you know, Civilian Conservation Corps, the things that put millions of people to work and built an infrastructure that has sustained the country for the last 75 years.
Thank you.
Roads, dams, libraries,
yes.
Everything.
Yes.
We don't have that in place anymore, and they're all crumbling.
That exactly.
Would elevate black males and other women, to have some work that they can have some self-esteem and feel good about.
Yep.
And when you have self-esteem and feeling good about yourself, you could have physical and social relationships that you can sustain.
Yeah. And then, so that goes back to, you know, something we shared a while ago of perspective, right? And I've heard, and maybe you can relate to this, Art, of I don't take no charity from folks. But at least that was a saying growing up for me. And, and perspective of even like, you know, the laws outside and all these things that within our community, we have to also be open to change as much as we want it. Like there's so many people within our own community that at the core, at the heart, I really, really do believe, you know, wants the system that we visualize and that we, you know what I'm talking about. And then surface level consciousness, belief systems and limiting beliefs and all of the stories we tell, that stuff gets in the way of what's actually possible. Right. Because I've met amazing people from all walks of life, you know, Dennis and Clay being just a few of them that, you know, share from different perspectives that have different backgrounds. And I love those interactions, but I can think of a handful of people that I know personally that would refuse to get on the call, never having known the people. So like there is a conversation that needs to be had within us that, you know, if you want this change to happen, you can't be scared of what that looks like. You can't be upset that it's actually taking place. Like we have to also give the permission for the change, and there has to be something there.
Yeah. And I so agree. And it's, I know for me, when I get into a place, like right now I'm in a big career push, and when I get into some areas where I am really uncomfortable, where I don't know or I have insecurities or whatever, I have this huge emotional I feel it in my gut and it comes up. And so I try to take that same emotion and go, well, when people are beginning to talk about race and beginning to talk, they must be feeling the same emotional push that I feel when I'm talking about the things that I'm insecure about. So just because I'm much more comfortable talking about race, because I've had this opportunity to talk with you and Matthew and with you, Art, and with John and with so many others during the time. So I've gotten it. It's become more normalized. I've been able to take some of my own emotions out. I've been able to look at my unconscious and conscious biases in new ways that I've never had. So now I'm more comfortable with that, but I've got to realize that there are many people who are not.
Well, we saw it the other day, 2 weeks ago, when there were several of us in our, you know, the on the 6th when we had that emergency meeting, and most of us had gone through weeks and weeks of our Racism in America session. And then there was one white fella in there who hadn't. And somebody rolled off the tongue something that didn't trigger anybody but him. And he's a good guy, but he hadn't been sensitized. And the contrast was stark.
Which is exactly what you were saying, Matthew. Which is exactly what, how do we begin to, Donna Edwards, a former congresswoman, it's in the Washington Post today, drove around the country in an RV and talked with many people. And it's the same thing. It's how do we have these conversations, and what is it going to take to have these conversations?
Well, there hasn't been any national dialogue on race. Clinton tried it and it fell flat on its face. Obama tried it, you know, to stimulate at the same time simultaneous discussions in public education, in higher education, and in the corporate workplace. They tried to have national discussions because there were issues all along, and nothing ever really came out of those. It's interesting that it just did not, is like a a seedling that died from lack of water.
Did it, or is it just the arc of history? Art, I mean, is there more going on now than we can see? Are there seedlings popping up all over? And again, you have to understand, Dennis is a blooming optimist, so you got to watch me. Please pull me back. You know, I am a privileged, blooming optimist. So with all those things saying, my hope, my dearest feeling is that there's seedlings popping up all over that are beginning to take root, but we can't see them. It doesn't look like it to us. We can't see it, but it's happening in conversations in schools and opportunities. That's what I would like to believe.
I'm sorry, I had to move outside. There were some things happening. Can you catch me up on the seedlings just briefly?
We were talking about art. You were talking about the discussions during the Clinton and during the Obama administrations, right? That went
yes, the initiatives on race to elevate those discussions as a national agenda.
Okay. Yeah.
In the corporate side, in the public education, and in private employers.
And I know for sure, I know this for sure. I'm working with all the way up to the top with an international insurance and money agency. And I know because I talked to a senior vice president and he's talking about how he knows they have all these initiatives. They have these initiatives within the organization and still people of color are not getting promoted into that next higher. They get to the supervisor level, but when you get to the director level he goes, it's not happening. And we're going to have to figure out some way to double down here because our biases are impeding the selection of people into these roles. Mm-hmm. And he knows that. He knows that. And he's going, I don't know. We've got to keep doubling down in here because while we say all the right things, it ain't happening.
Yeah. I feel like there's two arcs happening simultaneously that I'm not sure, and I'm not talking about this conversation, but I think on a bigger conversation, I'm not sure if we're seeing the intersectionality of them, which is the rapid technological advancements we're having, while also the growth and awareness we're having and how they're growing at completely different rates. and, you know, I like, as you mentioned, the Clinton and Obama conversations, and I think back to where technology was growing through that time. And it was really good conversations to start having, and we've been having them, but also simultaneously, our reach across the globe has dramatically increased on a person-to-person basis also, like to where a sixth grader in Milwaukee can talk to a Chinese person all the way across the globe. So as much as we've been putting, like Dennis said earlier, we need to step our game up, basically, because as much as we've been putting these seeds out, there have been bamboo stalks shooting up simultaneously in much other areas that are going a lot faster. Because I think about like the example you just gave of the promotion process where we've had a really good conversation. A lot of things have changed, but also with the media, the outlets, the social media, all this stuff, people's biases are also being strengthened. Right, I'm seeing more of the reasons why I hold this bias. More, like you understand what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So, while I'm talking about growing through the bias at a very slow, speeding rate, I'm also seeing 50 times more of why I hold the bias and don't like that person from the beginning. So we're kind of behind the ball, I feel, in terms of trying to figure out how to twist this narrative.
Let me ask a question. When you mentioned earlier growth and awareness, is this growth in what awareness are you talking about? Just to clarify.
Are you speaking to me?
Yeah.
Okay. I think personal awareness. Right, personal awareness around the stories, right, around the biases, around the choices I make, right? I just got off a call this morning, and it's interesting, Clay, you talk about the divine timing of things. I was working with a school system, and they're doing this stress management program. They want me to come speak at next week. And I was like, we can talk about that, but just know it's an identity issue. It's not a stress issue, right? The issue with stress is that you're holding yourself to an identity that you don't have, right? The expectation that I'm this parent, that I should be able to handle all these things in the midst of a pandemic and social unrest and, you know, 50 other balls happening at simultaneously, that I have this identity that I'm this perfect person who can do this. And that's not reality. Reality is you're you, right? And you need to be more selective of how you use your energy and how you do these things so that you can have a more cohesive inner system that works, that gets you the life you want. We need to talk about that up front, not just putting band-aids on how do you deal with the stress, go out here and break a plate or rip a piece of paper. Like, that's great and all, but we got to dive a little deeper. So if we can raise that personal awareness level, then I think so many of these other things start to also fix themselves naturally, right? Because when I'm okay with me, I'm not going to blame you for so much. And when you don't feel so blamed for so much, you're not so angry when you talk to me. And when we have a better communication pattern, then that changes the way I now see maybe other people aren't, you know, like that, right? And then, you know, maybe I'm more open to at least hopping on the call with Dennis and Clay and seeing what they have to say. Oh, well, maybe those were actually some really great guys. You know, I wonder if Jim back at the office is nice like that too. Oh, you know, and then that starts the trickle effect, right? But it all starts with me changing my own personal stories and being willing to be open to seeing what's possible. So that's why when we started this conversation, I said I was open, but open to showing, because they need to see first of what's possible. They need to see that, you know, when I talk to these organizations around how do we build an immunity into your organization, the first thing a lot of leaders want to do is, how do we do that? Like, what's the process to make it happen? And I tell them, like, the process is pointless if they don't see the value. They need to see the value first and why that process would matter. So that's kind of where I'm. Maybe that's a long way to answer the question. I hope it did a bit. Let me know.
Well, what I hear you saying, Matthew, is we have to increase the sense of personal agency, that you feel empowered to make change, because so many poor people, whether they're white or black, feel totally disempowered. You know, they don't feel like they can make any impact on the way things are. They're hard scrambling to survive. So that's why there are some systems issues that have to give them enough food to have to eat, enough work that they feel like they're providing something to the system, enough safety that their children can come home from school and not be kidnapped or brutalized. I mean, if you live in most inner cities, just getting to school is a challenge. When before COVID, you had to get there. We could laugh about Hard Knocks, but so many bright kids with potential of color are brutalized just going through the system.
I don't know if we have an email chain. I actually wrote a post about this last week. I would love to send you guys. It's a small, like, just like 2-3 paragraphs.
I just sent a notice to everybody, so you should have that in the top of your email with all four of us in it.
Awesome. Yeah, and it was.
I would love to read it, Matthew. Thank you.
Yeah.
No, I think you're making a great point, Arthur. And I think it goes back to what Dennis was saying a bit of these things are simultaneous. It's a yes and, right? There needs to be those. It needs to be those who have done the work, who've raised their awareness and see from a vantage point of where the issues are, who can lead the charge in tackling the systems. But then there also needs to be a group of people who need to go into the system and show people why it needs to be changed. So I think there needs to be those two groups that are able to run simultaneously.
And in addition, I feel that what you were talking about, Matthew, is the value proposition. Really, to let them know what would be the value in doing this? What would be the value to you? Yeah. What would be the value to you in being more, what is inclusive and diversity? I use the metaphor of the field. Anybody who is ever knows anything about agriculture knows that if you have a monoculture in a field, it depletes the soil. But if you have a diverse, rich culture within that, so it begins to replenish and it begins to get and flourish even more. And I think that the human consciousness is the same way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the systems that we haven't talked about is the religious or spiritual systems of the country, because much of the success. Clay, we talked about this the other day. Much of the success of the civil rights era was that people of goodwill, largely white people, who felt there was something that in Dr. King and others' leadership that was the right thing, the will of God, that they were joining in a movement. Yes, and that's lost, because now we have evangelicals and people who talk about God all the time who are actually with one foot on your neck, because they fear integration, they fear the rise of black males, period, because they even attach it to evil. And we don't know how large of those 80, 79 million or whatever the numbers are of people that voted for Trump don't buy in. The hardcore of that is an evangelical movement that does not embrace black self-determination and progress. And so that's got to be replaced by a larger population of people who see, I don't know what you call it, Christianity or something, for its true value, and that is part of the necessary uplift of all humankind.
But Art, that is it. You don't have to change the message. It's right there. These are it's merely an interpretation of it. You know, if we have this prosperity gospel that says, well, it's your fault. God, if you have a lot of money and you have a lot of privilege, it's because God has blessed you. And that if you don't have a lot of money and a lot of privilege, it's because God is judging you. If you have that in the prosperity gospel, it's an interpretation of the gospel. We can work to reinterpret that gospel, reinterpret, but the words are already there. The deeds are already there. The example is already there. We can use that as the basis. We don't have to go back into it
Well, I wouldn't argue that. I'm just looking at this, the macro picture of what are the challenges to full advancement of people of color, advancement of whites of goodwill, and how we're all going to do this together. And I'm saying there are these major pods of resistance that were not as clear even 5 years ago that we can now see in the media that are challenges we have to overcome. And that is, the evangelical movement is an anathema to true racial equality.
Agreed. And there's our opportunity to be able to have and open conversations. These are the things, I know that's what Clay, you and I both, are on this mission to have higher conversations with people that we would not have had before, and to be able to have these conversations. And I love that you said that, Art, because that is my opportunity. That is my opportunity to go out there, because that's where we as white men can be in conversations and be there in the same way that you can be there with African American men, and you, Matthew, can be in a place where I cannot, and be able to start conversations so that we can continue forth and get some.
And while we may be looking for answers, aren't we all in search of reconciliation? And what have we learned with In Search of the New Compassionate Male? We're not going out there with the answer. Come to me, I've got the answer. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you on my answer. Mm-mm. No. Join me in the journey.
Yeah.
Join me in the search. And I think that that's when there's one side that says, well, all you're doing is talking about it. What are you going to do? You know, conversation, you can have just so many conversations. Well, no, you can't. You there's no end to the conversations because there's so many levels that change happens. So much change that happens below the waterline that's deep and internal that changes a person's trajectory. And we walk away. Art, you look the same, you know, but no, you've changed. Clay, well, you look the same. No, something changed. So I think there's something to be had in giving ourselves the opportunities to be in search of. Now, how do we go in search of? Not how do we find the answer?
Yeah.
But how do we launch the search? Mm-hmm. How do we engage everybody in the search?
How do we lead with ears and not lips?
There you go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why, I mean, I think that we have to use our skills about what we have. And Matthew, right now, you're in the prime of moving into the limelight, of being able to give because of your presence and because of your personality and because of the gifts that you have, the media savvy that you have, and you're going to be able to be in the limelight, to be able to start these conversations and to get them there. I think this is one of the exciting things about meeting you at this time, because you've got that. I'm coming at it from a different time of my life and a different place, but this is the ascendancy that I see where you're going to be able to do that with the companies you're talking to, with the platforms you're going to be able to go out on, and I'm so glad we're with you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm glad you got the ribbon too. I need it. But, you know, what you just shared a few minutes ago, Dennis, made me think about something we've talked about in terms of building this bridge of reconciliation, that we have to have support systems in place with each other. Because, you know, as you were talking about coming from it from a different vantage point, it reminded me of this documentary on Netflix. I don't know if you guys have seen it. It's called Hello Privilege, It's Me, Chelsea.
Chelsea Handler. That is my next. That is on my next. I've seen the promos of it, but I really need to see it.
So there's a scene in there where she wants to have a conversation. Like, she's trying to have the conversation, and she goes into this African American, like this black community. And she goes to this establishment that's like, I can't remember what the purpose of it was, but there's a lot of black folks there. And here in comes Chelsea Handler, this like wealthy, rich white woman. And they just don't want to hear it, really. Like, she's there with good intent. Like, hey, I want to learn. I want to understand. And they're like, what are you here for? And, you know, that reminded me of this conversation where we have to have the support system in place to leverage the relationships, like to have Clay and Dennis in place. Like, hey, here's Art and Matt, and they have something really valuable that you need to hear. Or Art and Matt saying, hey, this is Dennis and Clay, and you really need to listen to what they have to say. It's important. And they're trying to learn, or they're trying to share. Right. And having both hands in order to where we can shake together. And that sounded weird out loud, shake together. But having the support system in place where we can leverage our relationships and actually make these conversations start happening.
Love it. Everybody, I need to leave at the top of the hour for a meeting, but man, do I want in on this.
I would love to have you.
I have to let us, I want in on all of this. Art, I've wanted the opportunity to collaborate with you more. If this is at all a bridge to that happening, thank God. Because I want that in Matthew the same way. And I'm like Clay said, he and I are joined. So any whither go with Clay, go with Dennis. And so that's this is terrific. I'm deeply grateful for the beginnings of this. I know there's something here.
Yeah. I would love it. I didn't get a chance to hear maybe the vision from Arthur of where you're trying to take things. Cause I want to know how to fit into the pictures to support everyone. But what is the vision you have for your work, where you want to impact, or however you say it?
Well, I really haven't, I can't say I have a vision any longer. I love the idea of Dr. King's beloved community. I mean, that was a term he used for years. And of course, I was just a young student in those days. But the beloved community or beloved community is everything that all of us are talking about right now. And I suspect despite all the bad things we see in the media and hear and read, we're closer to that concept than we would have been than ever before. We just don't know it. So I don't personally have a goal. I'm too old for that. I just want to.
Oh, bullshit. I mean, yes, I can understand that you may say that, Arthur, but still, the concept of beloved community, that rung inside my soul like a gong.
Yeah, same.
Because a beloved community is, now imagine the United States as a beloved community. No, I mean, I know we're not there. I know that, but just imagine what that would look like. What are the things that it would look like if the United States had a mission? We are to be a beloved community with one another. That is who we are. We are a beloved community.
Yeah.
That just, I have chills up and down my body.
So I don't know if you guys know this. I'm working with Susan in the charter, and in the beginning of February, I'm teaching a class called Lead Like Martin. And it's all about leadership principles of Martin Luther King. And the goal for me, at least, is to show how Martin led from the middle of the pack, right? And the theme picture is him crossing the bridge arm in arm in the center, right? And how do we stand into the middle of the community, drop these principles and values there and let them grow outward instead of trying to externally impose them on someone? So I love what you just mentioned, Arthur and Dennis, and the way you explained it, Dennis. That's exactly what I needed to hear going into this.
That is wonderful. All right.
Why can't we have a podcast, Dennis, that captures what we just talked about and that could reach literally millions of people in a short time if we had that vision of taking this discussion out far beyond anything we can do individually, of course.
So what I'd like to propose on that, Art, is that we four, this is the start of a discussion. This is the start. In that we decide that we're going to come together, you know, once a week at whatever time, and we're going to spend an hour on discussion, and knowing that it's going to go out on a podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Totally agree.
I'm so in.
Okay.
All right. Gentlemen.
Yeah.
Hugs to you all. And we will, and wow, I have certainly left this conversation at a higher level of consciousness than I entered it. So good for all of us. Good for me.
Yeah. He's quick with the trigger too. He's good. I got to head out too, but I really love this.
It's just great meeting you.
Yeah, same here. You know, I look forward to learning more about you. I know we just jumped straight into the deep end today, but I'd love to hear more about your story maybe the next time we chat.
Well, so what the turn that happened at the very end that I witnessed, I resonated with the idea, maybe not the words, but the idea of being in search of reconciliation. When you said the beloved community, that really that's what we're in search of. And that if we, and a subset of that is reconciliation. And so in amidst all of the notes and stuff, I think the goal is maybe in this area here, and I don't want to force it, but I think that we can get range, and I'm drawn off of the In Search of the New Compassionate Male. I get so much feedback that the beauty of it is that you're in search of. Join the search.
Yeah.
And that's, we can aim at that. And nobody knows exactly what that is, but we're aiming in the same direction. Yeah. And if we can generate that same energy towards this kind of conversation, then there's gold in it.
I have two questions, one for each of you. They're not deep, but in terms of what you just shared, I love that. And I'm curious if you feel like the reconciliation sits as a subset or as a foundation for this. And then I guess the second question I'll pose to Arthur was, do you feel like if reconciliation, right, whatever terming we use for that, does that encompass the rest of that conversation of the systemic things and all this other stuff, right? Does that all come under that umbrella of reconciliation, which then would lay the foundation for this new community to build upon? Because I'm a visual person, so I was trying to visualize how these pieces come together. So when you started saying reconciliation, I said, okay, well, that feels like a foundation to where we can build up from. But that also feels like a ceiling to which we need to build towards. From all these other conversations of systems, of housing, all the other stuff, right? Of how do we bring all that together in unity to reconcile? And then from that space, we can now build this new community of beloved and with righteous purpose, righteous cause. I don't know. How does that visual kind of sit with you guys?
I'm still stuck on the term reconciliation. I know it means a lot to Clay, but it strikes me as something Abrahamish, you know. I don't know.
Which Abraham are you referring to?
Yeah,
no, there's a couple different ones.
Lincoln type, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it might even be the original.
Well, say more about that, Art, because I'm at a loss for the language. That's why
I said whatever that terming is, right? But the idea that I was feeling was the coming together, right?
We've used it for quite a while. Clay has focused on that, and it means a lot. And I suppose when we think of like South Africa and its race relationships and so forth, it really is something of reconciliation. But when we look at this country and our global examples of black-white experiences and Portugal's subjugation of people all over South America.
There's the assumption that it started in a good space. Is that what you're getting at, right?
That
reconciliation assumes that we started in unity.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's a good point. That's a really So it's more of a restart. It's more of a reset. Yeah.
Matthew's putting it to words. I have not been able to, but something sticks here or there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that. I can feel that.
I really like that.
That's a good point.
I really like that.
Oh, this is, yeah, I'm going. This is like a thing that I want to sit with and ruminate on.
Yeah.
Man, thank you for, you know, questioning that, Arthur. That, yeah, I think that was an important thing, distinction to make.
Very cool. Matt, you're the future.
I'm excited for what we can do, man. I'm glad you recorded this, Clay. I would love a copy if possible. I know it's a big file. I don't know. Maybe this is the first episode.
Did you get your money's worth this morning, Matthew?
More than that.
But, all right.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. I'm looking forward to talking soon.
Thanks for starting the conversation.
Take care, man.
Yeah. See you later.
All right.
Love you guys.